This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Hypnobirthing, The Mongan Method, 4th Edition. A natural approach to safer, easier, more comfortable birthing. Written by Marie F. Mongan, M-E-D-M-H-Y. Performed by Eliza Foss.
Visual aids found in the print edition of this book are available to you as a downloadable PDF. To access this file, please click the link on the product page where you purchased this title. Thank you.
Foreword. Marie Mongan is a woman who has devoted her entire life to working with women of all ages and in all walks of life. Through her audiobook and the hypnobirthing method, she shares the conviction of her own personal birthing experience and her sensitivity to the emotional and spiritual needs of birthing women. The message about the normalcy of birth that this audiobook delivers is an essential one for all families who believe in and care about birthing their babies in safety, calm, and peace. This book and the hypnobirthing program itself has provided me and other doctors who share a belief in normal birth a framework within which to practice obstetrics in the manner in which our education has qualified us and in the direction in which our hearts have led us. It has changed the way many of us practice obstetrics. I began delivering babies in 1983. I believed in the use of drugs to manage obstetrical pain. In spite of my best efforts to use good, sound medical judgment, I saw lots of complications, including babies with compromised breathing. I believed that epidurals were a medical blessing for laboring mothers. I had a 25% C-section rate. Many patients demanded natural births. I then performed hundreds of deliveries using pushing and blowing while holding off analgesics until the mother could no longer take the pain. I saw babies that were no longer respiratorily compromised, but both mother and baby were exhausted. Quite often there was a need for respiratory support with oxygen. But my C-section rate had fallen to 5%. Next, I used visualization and guided imagery with patients to manage pain. On occasion, I still had to use narcotics and a rare epidural. I continued to see exhausted babies who were not fully able to bond. I still had a C-section rate of 5%. Eventually, I began using hypnosis to manage pain during birth. The results were okay. Babies were less often compromised and very rarely needed oxygen. But mothers still experienced painful births. My C-section rate remained at 5%. A few years ago, I made the transition to hypnobirthing, and I now truly believe that normal birthing does not have to involve pain. I have attended over 200 births of women who prepared for birth by learning and using the techniques and philosophy of hypnobirthing, the Mongan method. All of the families have left their birthings excited about the birth event. I see support people meaningfully involved with the mother and assisting in many different ways. I have had no complications. No babies have needed oxygen or any support other than warming by mother's body. My C-section count is 3 in as many years. I have given absolutely no analgesic drugs since I began using hypnobirthing with mothers. Over the years, I have come to realize that during a birthing, I no longer perform deliveries. I attend and observe as mothers birth their babies in calm and comfort, and birthing companions receive the babies as they emerge. It is as if my new role is to be present to witness the miracle of hypnobirthing. Now I enthusiastically lecture to medical groups on a regular basis about the merits of hypnobirthing as a means of achieving easier, more comfortable births for laboring mothers. I am more than happy to talk to healthcare professionals or anyone else about my experiences with truly natural birthing. I have a large number of happy hypnobirthing families, mothers and fathers, who love to talk about their own birthing experiences. In my position as a faculty member of the Atlanta Family Medicine Residency Program in Atlanta, Georgia, I trained medical residents to use hypnobirthing as an option for the families they will serve. I heartily recommend this audiobook and the well-thought-out program that it accompanies for its contribution toward making the birth of our children a positive and gentle step on the way to a better world. Lorne R. Campbell, Sr., M.D., Clinical Professor, Family Medicine. Looking back over 25 years. When the publisher of the third edition of our hypnobirthing textbook invited me to write a revision of the book for our 25th anniversary, it opened up a flood of memories and thoughts about the journey that has brought hypnobirthing to where it is today. Mongan Method Hypnobirthing is the leader and most comprehensive, natural, and instinctive birth education program that exists. It has, from the very beginning, reached beyond simple relaxation and introduced many advanced hypnosis techniques into the birthing classroom. The coincidence of this being our 25th anniversary year called back thoughts of experiences that bubbled over in my mind and could not be quieted. Where have we been and where have we gone in a whole quarter century? At this time, 25 years ago, Mora, my daughter, for whom the program was developed, had just given birth to our grandbaby Kyle. The other two women who also prepared for their births with hypnobirthing were due to birth at any moment. The success of Mora's birthing had the hospital staff talking about that woman in room 201 who had no epidural, had soft music playing, and the room dimmed all through her labor. One of the nurses on duty that day, Pat, who was also pregnant, made it a point to step into Mora's room quite regularly. Each time she stood by the door with a quizzical look on her face and stared at Mora. On one visit, she spoke. "And she hasn't had anything for pain? Really?" I remember leaving the room briefly to get a tuna fish sandwich, usually a poor choice with a birthing mother, and when I returned, I found a midwife on her knees writing the name of the artist on the tape that was in the tape player that I had placed obscurely on the floor behind a chair. When Mora's birth was complete, Nurse Pat came back into the room and asked for an appointment with me. As she left, she told the other nurses, "Hey, girls, this is the way I'm having my baby." My excitement doubled. I went home that afternoon, and with my notes taken during Mora's pregnancy and her birth, I began to set down the philosophy of birth that had been waiting all these many years since I was a child. One by one, I started to expand on the chapters of the coil-bound book I had prepared for my first three pioneer moms. I knew that I needed to put these feelings and observations down so that they could be shared with others. Writing that book was the easiest thing I've ever done. My enthusiasm was at peak, and my mind just wouldn't shut down for anything. With the other two births happening on the heels of the first and followed by Nurse Pat's birth, hypnobirthing became a buzzword in that hospital. Soon, a number of curious hypnotherapists who heard about what was happening in Concord, New Hampshire, called to ask, "Will you teach me what you taught Mora about birthing with hypnosis?" In no time, there were a number of hypnotherapists meeting with eager couples. The National Guild of Hypnotists invited me to present the program at their annual educational convention, and then we were on our way. Simply by word of mouth, we had hypnobirthings occurring all over the country. A paradigm shift began. There we were. I began to receive so many calls that I started to teach classes. Pregnant mothers and their birth companions filled the parent classes, and hypnotherapists, nurses, and doulas came to become practitioners. I had no idea of how urgently pregnant women were craving a better way to birth than the standard births that were offered by hospitals. They were hungry for a program that would allow them to forego anesthesia, but at the same time, make it possible for them to birth gently and in comfort. Since most hospital personnel themselves did not believe that birth could be free of fear and pain, there was only the home birth route, which also bore the burden of lack of public recognition and a lot of misinformation. I found out quickly when NBC's TV show Dateline presented a full-hour feature on birthing with hypnosis. At the end of the show, hundreds of people called or wrote to producers to tell them that they had neglected to tell the public that the program is hypnobirthing. The following morning, there was a front-page article on the MSNBC website about hypnobirthing, stating that it was I who founded the program. They gave a link directly to our hypnobirthing website. Without a bit of exaggeration, I can honestly say that we received almost 5,000 calls and emails over the next few weeks. Hypnobirthing took on a life of its own, and in a very short time, it took over my life as well. All of a sudden, we needed staff to be able to give referrals from a referral system we didn't even have as yet. We needed a second telephone and another person to receive the calls. We stepped beyond the realm of a passion and into the realm of business, a business we hadn't planned for. It looked as though the change in the way birth was viewed by the general public and care providers as well would come easily. With the impetus of that NBC show behind us, we saw a large number of pregnant families flocking to our classes. It became increasingly obvious, however, that not many care providers were impressed. When I first started teaching and accompanying birthing families into the hospital those many years ago, I remember naively thinking that surely doctors and midwives would be pulling me out of birthing rooms to inquire how they could replicate those beautiful scenes. I was sure that once they witnessed a few hypnobirthing mothers breathing their babies down to crowning in deep relaxation, they would insist on having all of their moms know how to achieve this phenomenon. I waited. The nurses were enthusiastic, and several midwives joined our ranks. Doctors regularly commented on how remarkable the births were, but except for a few, they showed no curiosity as to how these results were achieved. Even though they saw it happening time and time again, they seemed to dismiss the birthings as flukes. In looking back now, I must admit the acceptance of hypnobirthing didn't come the way I thought it would. It was a very steep uphill climb. A few times a doctor would inquire, "What did you say this is?" Many saw and frequently complimented the birth mother on her beautiful labor. Most had no questions, however, and were not interested in knowing how more of the mothers they were caring for could birth in this way. They quickly dismissed what they had just proclaimed really remarkable. They were content to move on to the next room and suggest a membranes rupture or even a Pitocin drip, if the mother was not progressing in line with the Friedman curve. Pitocin was usually the order of the day if the doctor's shift was to end in a few hours. So often, a beautiful, calm birthing was given over to manipulation, with little thought to the dramatic change in the mother's comfort level. Once in a while, a doctor would ask me how I could prove that what we teach in hypnobirthing classes resulted in what we were seeing. I was always amused by that question. It reminded me of the trial scene from the movie Chicago, when the defense attorney is asked for evidence of something he had just brilliantly illustrated. The defense attorney replied, "And what is it that you are seeing that you need evidence of?" Though our success didn't happen overnight, as I reflect on those years, I realize that we gradually made some significant changes just from our requests. In the hospital in Concord, New Hampshire, where hypnobirthing first caught on, as a mother was settling into her birthing room, her nurse would pull a chair over to the side of the bed and ask to spend a few minutes with the family so that I can be sure that I understand exactly what you mean by some of your birth preferences. Over time, we would find that there was already a birth ball in the room. and the nurse would remind the mother to ask when she was ready to use the tub. Someone cared enough to assure the mother that she was welcome and her requests would be honored as far as possible. The nurse's overt support made up for the oblivion of some of the other care providers. Eventually, there were some doctors who displayed approval, but they were closet enthusiasts. Soon, I began to receive invitations from places all over the world to bring certification workshops to their countries. Canada was the first, but not far behind were the Virgin Islands, the UK, and Australia, and on and on. Over the years, we have had the pleasure of training some of the finest people in the world, our teaching practitioners, without whom hypnobirthing may have remained simply the talk of the Concord hospital staff for a few short days, and then it would have just faded away. Those who shared our belief gravitated to our program. It was they who truly catapulted hypnobirthing to the position it holds today as the leader in the field of childbirth education with hypnosis. Prior to that time, the midwives who were teaching instinctive birthing had no instructional program or key techniques to build upon. Many of these women came in droves, as did many nurses who were discouraged with what they were seeing happening in hospitals. Nancy Wainer, midwife extraordinaire and author of 2 books on natural birthing, joined our ranks and declared, "Hypnobirthing is the missing link we have all been seeking for years." With so many birth advocates sharing the same vision, hypnobirthing grew. It became exemplary of what gentle birth should look like and what it should feel like for the birthing mother and baby. In addition to seeing what hypnobirthing could do for the families, these birthing professionals also realized how it brought more ease and joy to their own work. Nurses who saw instinctive birthing and worked with hypnobirthing families were instrumental in bringing hypnobirthing to their hospital's education programs. It was a good fit, in spite of those who found it difficult to believe that a baby could descend and emerge without his mother scrunching up her body, holding her breath, and forcefully pushing her baby out with all her might. Even now, a whole quarter of a century later, there are people who still subscribe to purple pushing. It's what is portrayed in movies and on television. The general public watches and accepts, and pregnant mothers cringe. For a long time, some birthing professionals tenaciously clung to almost gymnastic-like moves that had the mom pulling on a rolled sheet or hanging over a squat bar for endless periods of time. Some facilities had women hanging upright from a huge knot in a rope to use the benefit of gravity. Eventually, that all went by the wayside, with only a few continuing to preach the inevitability of severe pain. Those few sometimes even felt the need to advise the birthing mother that hypnobirthing may work at the beginning, but not later when the pain is more severe. They were oblivious to the fact that every word they spoke instilled more fear into the minds of vulnerable mothers. The many positive features and benefits of this shift in birthing paradigm continue to draw the attention of healthcare providers. We began to see more standard healthcare providers supporting hypnobirthing families with relaxed protocols and fewer unnecessary precautions being applied to women who are free of special circumstances. The light shining upon hypnobirthing became broader and brighter. Major television morning shows and leading publications printed feature articles. Local TV channels featured our birth stories on their evening news shows. Consumers were asking about natural instinctive birthing. It was catching on among birthing parents. Others came and trained and intentionally copied and imitated. They took our concept, our materials, and our trade name, and they started their own hypnobirthing programs. We knew then that we had a good thing, and that good thing continued to grow. In so many places over the years, we saw a sizable shift away from traditional standard hospital birth scenes that had women tethered with epidurals, needles, IV poles, tubes, wires, and belts. These confining and frightening scenes began to be replaced with scenes of quiet and calm women who were free to move about or just relax. The only wires that were anywhere near were those of the earphones that mothers used to listen to soothing birthing music and scripts. In some places, women requesting calm birth were no longer restricted from eating. Care providers came to see and recognize that when endorphins are present and the constrictor hormone catecholamine is not, digestion is not arrested because the mother's body is not in the state of alarm. Hypnobirthing gained more attention. Requests for speaking engagements and interviews poured in, along with invitations to conduct training workshops for practitioners. The hypnobirthing way of birth was catching on. Working on this book revision has made me realize how successful natural birth advocates have been in bringing about substantial improvements in the birthing experiences of thousands of happy birthing families, most of whom chose hypnobirthing to prepare for their babies' births. The concept of instinctive birth also attracted the attention of some of the kindest and most caring birth professionals, nurses, doctors, and midwives, who were at first curious, but are today more willing to openly support instinctive birth. When we look at trends in birthing over the past 2+ decades, we see that truly, new life and birth are celebrated in many mainstream healthcare facilities, as well as in complementary settings. This shift also points to a vast increase in the number of birth centers that have opened their doors to couples seeking natural birth but wanting a home-like atmosphere. Home births are regularly considered an option by families of all kinds of lifestyles. From several Hollywood movie stars and well-known entertainers and sports celebrities to families in small towns and farmlands, many hospitals are accommodating families who are seeking an environment where they can birth naturally, yet have the comfort of medical staff on hand. Throughout the world, birth is seen as the important transformational human experience that it is. It is far more than the process of getting baby born and just moving on. It is recognized and celebrated in various ways. I'm told there is a large hospital in Southern California that has an entire fourth floor devoted to ABC, a better childbirth. I visited a hospital outside of Detroit that has furnished their natural birth rooms with queen beds and a home-like atmosphere with soft light and soft music, no frightening apparatus visible. In a hospital in Minnesota, the carpeting leading into the birthing center has inlaid appliques of dragonflies, bees, lily pads, frogs, and flowers. The rooms look like 5-star hotel rooms, and there is not a visible piece of equipment in the room that shouts, "Be warned," and "Be afraid." I asked where some of the usual machinery and equipment is. I was told, right around the corner, concealed, where it belongs, unless we need it, when it takes only a couple of seconds to get it. Outside is a lovely walking path lined with flowers in the summer and benches for couples who want to spend some of their labor time outdoors in nature. The surgical unit has a similar healing garden. When a baby is born in this hospital, strains of Brahms' Lullaby filters through the sound system, and patients and visitors alike honor the new life that has just come into the world. I once attended a birth with a mother who was the first hypnobirthing mother at that hospital. I met a doctor by the name of Dr. Care. When he left the room, I commented to the nurse, "What a fantastic name for a person who attends births." Shortly after, a young doctor walked in, and the nurse said to him, "When Dr. Care was here, Mrs. Mongan commented that she thought the name Care was a perfect name for an obstetrician." The doctor extended his hand and said, "I'm happy to see my first hypnobirthing. By the way, my name is Dr. Luti, and in Italian, it means care. We all laughed. After the baby was born, the mother was told that the nurse had to take the baby away to put the bands on. The doctor looked up and said, "Bring the bands to the baby." And the mother continued to hold her newborn baby in her arms. I am sure you can guess that this mother's birth story was a beautiful one. That is all it took to start a new trend in that hospital. 15 years ago, I was invited to bring the first hypnobirthing certification workshop to London to train practitioners. I taught the class at St. Thomas Hospital, Florence Nightingale's hospital. This gave me the opportunity to observe and learn much about the midwifery model, an extremely mother-baby-friendly model of birthing. What I saw was a birth model that is strikingly different from what I was accustomed to in the States. I liked what I saw, and I learned a great deal about this exemplary birth model that is among the most common of approaches to maternity care in the world. And a trend was begun at the hospital. With the help of a few midwives who became hypnobirthing practitioners early on, we were able to blend the two philosophies into the book that is now used by practitioners in the UK. The birthing unit at St. Thomas is staffed by a group of midwives whose enthusiasm for natural birth matches their gentle and friendly manner. In a hospital in New Hampshire, where a large number of hypnobirthing families choose to birth, the family is treated to a beautiful dinner delivered to their room on a dinner cart, as elegant as one would find with room service in an upscale hotel. This hospital also has tubs in a separate room. Postpartum rooms are furnished with a trundle bed for a sibling and a queen bed for the new parents. Their infant not only rooms in, but sleeps with his parents in a family bed with a special little bed frame for the baby to safely sleep. For healthy mothers who present minimal risk, routine practices, protocols, and procedures are being relaxed. As more couples are requesting natural birthing, more hospitals are feeding their moms. In some places where low-risk mothers are active and mobile, moms have shed the dull, ill-fitting patient gowns for attractive labor gowns for this special event. The gown is especially designed to be hospital-friendly, with a halter top that ties or snaps at the back of the neck for ease of breastfeeding, and strategically placed openings in the front of the gown to allow for easy access when checking baby's well-being or for birth. These facilities are but a few of the places where the shift is taking place. There are many more, and more will follow. As parents begin to make their wishes known and are willing to seek out the right environment and the right birth professionals, they are able to achieve the kind of birth that leaves them feeling fulfilled and joyful. These hospitals are only a few of the medical facilities where the shift has taken place, and birthing families are treated as if they and their births matter. There are many more where staff has seen gentle births, and they are welcoming parents wishing this birth style. Hospitals are adjusting, and it is clear that their services are not only for the birthing families whose pregnancies are at risk. There is much hope for those parents who want natural birth, but also feel more comfortable in a hospital environment. An opposite paradigm shift appears. During these same years, while natural birth advocates were basking the growing success of an increased awareness of natural instinctive birth, a second paradigm from within the medical community appeared to be going unequivocally in a direction that is opposite from calm, gentle birthing. This shift supports an increasing number of inductions, often scheduled ahead of the estimated delivery date, EDD, for nothing more than the chronology of the matter. Many women are being told, not advised or given a suggestion, that if they have not gone into labor before their estimated date, they will be induced on that date. This is all in spite of the fact that the EDD is just that, an estimated date. Statistics show that first-time moms average 41.3 weeks of gestation. There is little or no room within this shift for consideration of a normal natural birth. This model feeds on suspicions and fear of impending danger. Very early on, mothers are being told of some possible danger and advised that they should expect an early induction or a C-section. Parental wishes, emotions, and expectations are swept under the rug in favor of chemical, chronological, and technological factors. In recent years, we are hearing of exceptionally large numbers of women who are suspected of having dangerous complications. These possible complications will necessitate regimented and strict protocols. Labor usually will call for frequent interruptions and examinations. Overuse of technology and apparatus make it almost impossible to experience normal birth. The natural rhythm and flow of labor is destroyed, and as a result, labor can often go awry, along with the parent's dream and excitement. There seems to be a disregard for the relevance of parental input. Advocates of this shift appear to have a disregard for the sanctity of birth and do not view birth as one of the most important of our human life rituals. These unnecessary distractions that are part of this other birth paradigm are puzzling and quite discouraging to natural birth advocates. Their existence speaks volumes about the need to move away from the one-size-fits-all approach to birthing. It points out a screaming need for birth professionals to take a good look at the people they serve. In this way, they can begin to see and to meet birthing mothers as whole people who are experiencing a once-in-a-lifetime family event that is unlike any other. Birth touches the emotions, the spirit, and the psyche of all involved. It calls for birth professionals who are kind, caring, and sensitive. One doctor in California describes the ideal birth attendant as one who loves babies, loves birthing women, and loves birth. As we approach the end of this first 25-year period, it becomes clear that birthing parents who choose to learn and become prepared to experience a relaxed, natural birth must become informed about the philosophy of their intended care provider. They also need to be prepared as to what is routine and standard protocol for the facility in which they intend to birth. The time to make these decisions is before the birthing day, not when you are in labor. My focus for the past quarter century has been to bring relaxed natural birthing to the attention of birth professionals. I hope they would see and understand that all birth need not be approached with fearful anticipation and preparation for sudden complication. I'm now placing my hopes on the most relevant players in this transformational and human experience, the birthing families. Most parents hear only of standard care or routine protocol or practice. These two phrases do not always mean that what the birthing mother will experience is only evidence-based treatment or that it is the best path to take. In their innocence and lack of information, parents approach their births with resigned submission. It's not that they don't care. It's that they don't know what they don't know. Today, I am optimistic that there will be a full shift in the direction of natural birthing that will show more sensitivity to the simple needs of the low-risk and no-risk majority of mothers who need little standard or routine care. I feel, though, that I will not see that happen in my lifetime. I'm convinced now that this awakening has to occur first within the mindset of the consumer families. They are not asking for more or for special treatment. They are asking for less. Parents are simply asking that if everything gives reasonable indication of normality, they be given the opportunity to birth calmly and gently as nature intended, without drugs and other procedures intended to give labor a jump start or move it along. It is they who are most transformed. It is they who must step up and accept the importance of educating themselves and actively seeking the birth professionals who will respect their work. Hopefully, we will soon see that parents do not need to ask the same questions that families have been asking for the last 25 years. They won't feel the need to make a case for gentle treatment and kinder birthings. With education, they will recognize that they have the power to find and choose the care provider and the birthing environment that will make the difference in their lives and the lives of their babies. The first hypnobirthing story. When I looked into my baby's eyes for the first time, I knew at that moment what real love actually is. Maura Geddes. I left home at about 5:30 that January morning in 1990. As I slipped into my car, I felt the shock of the cold leather seats. The air was exceptionally cold and crisp, even for an early January morning in Concord, New Hampshire. Ordinarily, I would never venture out at that time of the morning in the peak of winter, but this was a very special day and time. I knew there was no real rush, but I found myself hurrying out of my driveway and out onto the road to the city. The main road was deserted and dark, and it was mine for the taking. I was eager to reach Maura's house to learn how she was feeling and to help her gather her things to bring to the hospital. The city was quiet, but the still prevalent holiday lights added to my excitement and feeling of celebration. This was the day that we had all been waiting 9 long months for. It was finally here. The first hypnobirthing baby was soon to arrive. Just before I reached Maura's house, I had to slow down as I caught sight of a police cruiser neatly tucked away with lights off at the entrance of a local cemetery. I slowly drove past him, smiled, and rehearsed what I would say when he pulled me over on our way to the hospital after I had picked Maura up. I fully planned to fly past him and get his attention. I chuckled, picturing the drama of our arriving at the hospital with a police escort. Not. The cruiser was gone when we made that return trip around 7:30. Even in a perfectly scripted scene, I couldn't interject that drama into our first hypnobirthing. When I arrived at Maura's house, I found a perfectly relaxed woman who had an obvious ready-to-go air about her. I was both pleased and relieved to see that she was in a light mood, smiling and conversant. We talked as she moved about, tidying and checking her house before we left. I saw no indication of fright or nervousness. There were two friends who had also studied hypnobirthing at the same time that Maura did. All three were expecting their babies around the same time, and I prayed that Maura would be the first to birth. I so wanted my grandbaby to be the first hypnobirthing baby. I wondered how each of these three trusting pioneers would meet the start of labor. I also wondered how the hospital staff would meet their determination to have their babies naturally. Maura was the epitome of calm, and I knew that she was prepared. I was encouraged that the other two first hypnobirthers would experience that same confidence. When we arrived at the hospital, Maura was brought directly to triage and then admitted, even though the attending nurse found her to be in less than what is considered active labor. Maura assured the nurse that she was experiencing regular surges. It was only then that Maura was told that her midwife was not available and that she would be attended by a midwife whom she didn't know. Once more, I wondered how she would handle that bit of information. True to a very important affirmation in hypnobirthing, I will accept whatever turn my birthing takes, the news did not stress or upset her. She remained at that same level of opening for almost 4 hours. I know now that this is not uncommon for hypnobirthing moms. Their labors very often do not conform to routine numbers on progress charts. Their bodies labor, but there is little change in their appearance. It is also not uncommon for them to very suddenly register a greater degree of opening in a much shorter time. Concerned that her labor was not progressing sufficiently to match the prescribed expectation, at about 10:30 in the morning, her nurse suggested that she get up and get those muscles moving. It will speed up your labor. Maura was helped into a suggested squatting position, but with no preparation for squatting, she decided very quickly that she didn't care for the squat. She then began to walk, but got as far as the door and said, "No, thank you. I need to go back to relaxing now." She was tuned into her body and realized that the pace of her labor was stepping up. She needed to relax into her birthing body as she experienced active labor. We heard little from Maura from that point on, except after she had listened to a woman in the next room scream steadily for a couple hours and beg for help from above. Maura opened her eyes and looked at me and asked, "Am I going to get to that stage?" The nurse answered, "Heavens no, you are way beyond that stage." Things were good. Shortly after 1 p.m., Maura was completely opened and was advised to begin to forcefully push, while her midwife strenuously stretched her perineum, sometimes with both hands. Maura was obviously in pain through this episode and called out to me to have the midwife stop tugging with her fingers. The midwife continued, and after some time, she performed an extensive episiotomy, saying, "This will help the baby come out faster." Thankfully, an episiotomy is seldom performed in most hospitals today. Birth attendants have learned that the folds of the perineum open by themselves and that the majority of cases call for patience to allow the natural expulsive reflex to move the baby down to crowning. At 3:30 p.m. that afternoon, Kyle Patrick Geddes, the first hypnobirthing baby, was born. We were ecstatic. Hypnobirthing baby number one had arrived. We had no idea that there would be thousands and even hundreds of thousands to follow, or that we would have representation in over 48 countries around the world. What a landmark day. We were simply happy in the knowledge that babies can come into the world with kindness, gentility, and respect for both mother and baby. Birth is indeed the greatest celebration of life. We had gone full circle. From Maura, the first intended natural birth baby in that county, to Kyle, the first hypnobirthing baby. I can't even begin to express how moving this experience was for me. Maura, without realizing it at the time, had blazed a trail, and she did it without having the encouragement of many mothers before her who birthed naturally. Additionally, while her regular midwife encouraged her to have a natural birth, when it came time for her birthing, her midwife of choice was not there. I believe that on some deeper level, Maura remembered her own birth, and that allowed her to trust that her body and her baby knew how to birth instinctively. The trail this woman blazed continues to widen today, for her footsteps have been followed by so many happy hypnobirthing moms who wanted gentle birthing but lacked a program that would give them that choice. We know that this is not the story of the first natural birth, nor was it the only natural birth. Women have been birthing naturally for centuries, but this was the first hypnobirthing at a pivotal time. It proved that relaxed birthing that is free of stress and fear for all involved can be achieved routinely if the birthing mother is properly prepared and genuinely supported by her caring providers. It was significant at this time because some of the practices of active management of labor, already with a foothold in other countries, were creeping into American births almost without notice. Hospital births were far from natural. Women who birthed in hospitals routinely expected to be medicated. In their apprehension, they demanded it. Today, we simply ask, is it not possible to acquiesce to the requests of the women who want less or none, as it is to the women who demand more? I chose to include this story, not because it is the birth story of my daughter and grandbaby, but because it is a happy, positive birth story, and birth stories are important. Whether a birth story is a happy birth story or a not-so-happy birth story, it reveals the importance of parents taking the responsibility for knowing how they want to experience the arrival of their babies, whether their birthing takes place in a hospital, a birthing center, or in a home. This first hypnobirthing mother, without the advantage of having watched many natural births on the internet and in films, and without the benefit of many happy birth stories, knew she wanted things to go differently, and they did. If this could happen for her, most certainly with the education, preparation, and choices that are available to you today, it could easily happen for you. A Russian mother's comments about hypnobirthing. I recall it now, and I would say my son's birth is one of the best moments in my life. My doctor was shocked. She said she had never seen anyone being so calm and relaxed during the labor. My hypnobirthing experience made me realize how wrong our childhood attitudes are toward birth. Anastasia Ivanova, Moscow, Russia. Mongan method of hypnobirthing, its roots. I think I always knew and believed that birthing should be simple, instinctive, and even joyful for mothers, babies, and birth partners. I think I came here with that knowing because from a very early age, I held a fascination for babies. I thought that babies should come onto this earth plane gently, in keeping with the beings that they are. I had heard people speak of babies as gifts from heaven, and I was thoroughly convinced that meant that babies are angels. Everywhere I looked, there was proof of it. Greeting cards at Christmas, pictures at church, comments from adults referring to a baby as a little angel. For me, it all led to the same conclusion. Babies are angels. As soon as I was old enough to make my wishes known to Santa, I asked for a real baby doll. My pleas were heard, because I did receive a baby doll that was so nearly real that she could drink water and then expel the liquid instantly onto her diaper and her blankets. She was a little small, but so was I. The following year, when all my neighborhood friends were asking for Shirley Temple dolls, I again asked for a baby doll. But this time, I wanted a doll that was the size of a real baby. Once more, my wish came true, and I found a life-sized baby doll under the Christmas tree. I didn't put her aside for weeks. Her eyes closed when I laid her down, and they opened when I picked her up. She was perfect. I wasn't much older when Mrs. Burrell, our next-door neighbor, brought her newly born baby home from the hospital. She very kindly tolerated my curiosity and let me spend time at her house just watching the baby sleep and watching Mrs. Burrell bathe her and care for her. The baby affirmed my belief. She looked exactly like the angels I had seen pictures of. I didn't even notice that she didn't have wings. I was still very young, almost 5, when I first heard a birth story. My mother and a group of her friends used to gather regularly at one home or another in the neighborhood. They often brought their babies with them. I used to hide just outside the living room door when they met at our house. I would sit quietly and listen because sooner or later, mostly sooner, their conversation would focus on their babies. One day, one of the women talked about what she had experienced when she delivered her second baby. As I listened, I know that my jaw must have dropped to my chest. Everything that she was saying was not at all how I had pictured angels being born. Her story was terrible. The entire story was punctuated with the words danger, afraid, and miserable. She told of her journey by ship from New York to California by way of the Panama Canal, just weeks before she was due to have her baby. She was afraid of water, but taking the longer boat trip was cheaper than going by train across the country. She was violently seasick from the very beginning of the trip, and it continued throughout the journey. Her doctor on the ship was afraid that her baby would not be able to tolerate the constant retching, and he was afraid that she would be thrown into labor prematurely. She was dangerously dehydrated and was experiencing terrible cramping. He was not at all encouraging about the danger she and her baby were facing if it continued. When she arrived in California, she was taken to the hospital just in the nick of time. She continued to describe her labor that followed. This part of her story was even more frightening than what she had previously been telling the group. She spoke of a long, hard, and horribly painful labor that led to fetal distress. The situation finally required forceps to pull the baby down through the birth canal. When she awakened from anesthesia, she was informed that her baby had damaged her pelvic region so badly that it was unlikely that she would ever be able to have more children. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I felt sick. I asked myself, why would she say those things? Angels are not born that way. God would never have let that happen. I ran to my room in tears. I cried many more times over that story, and it wasn't the last time I was to hear it, because the woman who told the story was my mother, and I was the baby who damaged her body so badly. I felt a tremendous guilt throughout my growing up years. My guilt eventually turned into resentment every time I heard the story. I hated the thought of it. It was all so wrong. As I grew older, I began to really listen and hear the repeated messages of what I looked upon as the war stories. Birth is scary and dangerous. The more I heard, the more I sensed that I was growing up in a family and a society of women whose thoughts were very much occupied with the trials of being a woman and the perils of giving birth. It almost seemed that every woman who had experienced birth felt somehow compelled and delighted to tell her birth story, and it was always bad and filled with anguish. I remember very clearly the day my sister had her first menstrual period. It was as though my younger aunts were welcoming her into a sorority of female victims. They told me, "Your sister is a woman now. She has the curse." I really didn't know what they meant by the curse. But I quickly caught on that being a woman and having the curse was a free pass to spending at least one day a month languishing emotionally and physically and being excused from any chores that were strenuous. This curse wasn't all that bad, I thought. It would have been very easy for me as a child to get pulled into this abyss of victimization, to succumb to the fear-filled discussion, and become so fearful of birthing that I may have chosen to avoid birthing altogether, as many women have done for many years. Or I may have chosen to seek a surgical birth out of fear and a lack of good information. I honestly think that my mother's birth story made me the strong advocate for instinctive and natural birthing that I am today. Instead of developing a fear of birth, I searched and developed a philosophy of birth. Her story served as a catalyst for me. It challenged me later to reflect on what I had been feeling all those years, and ultimately to seek a more balanced, natural, reasonable, and logical view of birth. In talking with birth advocates in recent years, I find that I am not alone in having been led to natural birthing because of a friend or a family member who, for years, repeatedly told a horrific birth story to anyone who would listen. Others said that they, too, chose to become involved in natural birthing because of these kinds of stories and felt the need to try to change the view of birth for that same reason. The real tipping point came when I was in high school. Our English class was assigned to write a research paper. This provided me with an immediate and high incentive to really dig into books on birth and to find what I was looking for. I chose, as my topic, Achieving Safe and Gentle Childbirth. I thought it would be easy. I was so wrong. I found mostly thick medical textbooks, so heavy that I could hardly carry more than one at a time. These books were also heavily laden with the discussion of dangers, risks, abnormalities, and cautions that doctors in training would likely encounter in their practices. In spite of the fact that only a small percentage of women presented with these abnormalities, especially back then, the books I found were solely devoted to what-ifs and subsequent procedures to remediate the problems. There is no arguing the point that this training and knowledge is essential, and that these well-honed skills and techniques have saved the lives of many women and babies over the years. However, I was struck by the absence of discussion on normal birth. I was also amused when I read an interesting caution in one of the leading medical texts of the time. The book suggested that the physician should exercise caution when working with the educated, sophisticated woman who may harbor a notion that she knows how to bring a baby into the world. There it was, in print, an identified enemy of birth rather than the giver of birth. I felt that the absence of discussion on natural, normal birth left a serious void in obstetric education, and could, over time, have influenced the manner in which some doctors interact with their birthing families. From everything I could find, I came away with the feeling that the people writing the books considered only the human body and not the emotional and spiritual human elements that accompany the person they will be working with, probably more intimately than any person other than a mate. There was no mention of the privilege doctors enjoy in being invited to assist at one of the most transformational events in a woman's lifetime. It was, indeed, straightforward, didactic discourse with an obvious breach between the psyche and the soma. These writings shed light on a possible reason for why such a large number of doctors, even today, may seem so uncomfortable with requests for their support of families who present low risk or no risk when the parents are looking for natural birth in a hospital setting. Years later, when I was living in Arizona, I was invited on three occasions to speak about hypnobirthing before the OBGYN club of a medical school. Each time, I asked the students, who were about to graduate in a few weeks, how many of them had witnessed a natural birth. I explained natural as opposed to normal. Not one hand was raised. I explained first.